War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's Friday, the 20th of December, year of our Lord 2019. We're live on Capitol Hill and absolutely stunning. It's last day of fall, right? First day of winter is tomorrow, the solstice. So I guess it's the last day of fall, but it feels like winter here in Washington, D.C. It's episode 82. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network nationwide, americasvoice.news, streaming platform throughout the world. And now we're on Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable operation, news operation in the country. Raheem Kassam from our mother country. He's the wingman of Nigel Farage, a populist from way back and one of the architects of Brexit. Jason Miller, senior communication strategist on Trump 2016, greatest comeback victory in American political presidential history, and also the transitions communication director. Welcome, gentlemen. Let's go. This thing, you know, I thought the shabby process, kind of they brought it to a head, right, with solemnity, right, everything on Thursday night. And then on Wednesday night, and now it looks like it's turned into a total fiasco.
Oh, complete fiasco. I mean, so now Capitol Hill has gone home. This thing isn't going to come back until January. And Speaker,
I told Holly, he's a clear and present danger. The urgency that we went through this thing from starting in intelligence and whistleblower and judiciary and rules and then vote and had to not have 9 hours or 11 hours or 12 hours, had to put it to six that led to 9 hours. But the whole point of why you're doing it, why it has to be done today, he's a clear and present danger.
Well, the other thing, too, is Noah Feldman. Remember, he was part of Professor Palooza, the guy with the goofy tie. He says that President Trump isn't even impeached.
This is our new thing. This is non-impeachment day two.
Yeah, so we're just in this bizarro limbo world where now Capitol Hill has gone home. Nothing's going to happen until January.
Is he impeached or is he not? I think Noah Feldman's right. It's a process. He said it's got two steps. Number one is you do your thing and vote. Number two, you got to deliver said document, articles of impeachment, to the Senate.
Right.
Impeachment hang fire.
So until they name those managers and send it over to the Senate, it's not an impeachment. And so, the Democrats have completely shown themselves
for the witness protection program. We're going to get in this later. The witness protection program that is the Democratic presidential primary. This is bad news because this thing's going to go on through February.
Well, and that's why we're calling them the permanent impeachment party. I mean, they literally want to make this a permanent impeachment. In fact, the Wall Street Journal today in their ed board, they said that McConnell should go ahead and hold the trial anyway, with or without the House impeachment manager. Say, okay, great, we're going to have the vote. You guys voted. We don't know what you're doing. We're going to go ahead and vote. Send everyone home. This is stupid.
So, Raheem, where are we in this?
Look, I mean, you've got, as you said, this is a so-called matter of urgent national security. But we're going to put it off a little bit because we can't really figure out what's going on with the impeachment managers or whatever. I don't know if you guys saw.
No, not impeachment managers. She's saying I need to see a process. Does she have leverage here or does she not?
No, she doesn't.
She's a master political strategist. Has she met her match in Mitch McConnell?
She boxed herself in on
the process.
She lost the label of master strategist a long time ago. I mean, I know you're saying it just to trigger me, but you've successfully done it this morning, Steve Bannon. But no, Nancy Pelosi doesn't have control over the U.S. Senate. There's nowhere in there where the framer said the House then gets to dictate how the Senate sets this up, and it's never been done.
Do you think McConnell being dismissive of her yesterday's got her even more, her back up even more? Because he was pretty dismissive. Right. Shoddy process, dumping this thing. You called it
a slapdash.
Not slapdash. Slap you called it a smelly heap of garbage or something.
Yes, he dumped a heap of garbage. No, I thought McConnell did the right thing. He took more gravitas, took more of an air of seriousness, and it called out the Democrats for their hypocrisy here.
Look, here's why I say impeachment managers or whatever. Did you guys see the clip of Nancy Pelosi talking yesterday? Absolute gibberish for a minute straight. I mean, I can play it for you.
It
won't make a lot of sense, guys.
I love all things Nancy.
Let's see if we can play this.
You got this.
We got to tee it up here. The connection not quite right now.
Okay, that's okay.
I'll try and bring Nancy in over the top of you at some point.
Is this more than okay?
Just when we bring the bill,
we have Nancy Pelosi.
Have said of looking like you're playing games with impeachment if you hold on to these articles for too long.
I said what I was going to say, Nancy. We have. when we bring the bill, which is, just so you know, there's a bill made in order by the Rules Committee that we can call up at any time in order to send it over to the Senate and to have the provisions in there to pay for the impeachment and then the next step and the whatever you want to call it, the trial. That is where you put the managers. I was not prepared to put the managers and that bill yet because we don't know the arena that we are in. Frankly, I don't care what the Republicans say. Any other questions?
Hold on. I don't want to hear any cracks about her dentures, okay? Don't even go there.
This goes beyond dentures.
What was that?
A steaming pile of garbage? I don't know what you call that.
That was panic. That was I did not expect to be in this position.
And I'm making this up as I go along. But here's the thing on scheduling. Number one, somebody's got to get to the president and talk about USMCA. This thing of bracketing USMCA to make a quick trial, it's only got 30 days. It's ticking from yesterday. They finally got to USMCA. You got 30 days on it, right? Somebody's got to talk the business of the Senate when they come back because Pelosi's not going to take care of this. They come back the 6th, the 7th. This fiasco in the House is going to take a week, right? To run around, talk about who they got, back and forth. So that means the whole week of 7 to January, we thought was going to be the beginning of the trial of the century. It's not going to happen. That's why USMCA, and this trial is not going to get done in 2 weeks. You guys agree with that? It's going to be, no matter what your start date is, no, we'll get into the details of that later, but this is going to take a while.
The earliest possible speed process of this in the Senate is 3 weeks. I think we're probably looking at, you know, more like 4 or 5 weeks overall. But Steve, you make a great point on USMCA. And keep in mind, it's not going to be just a simple one-day process in the Senate for that either.
So Toomey's already said, I mean, they already got some guys in the Republican Party, the Cato crowd, is saying, hey, we're not for this. So they got some work to do and some debate.
Exactly.
So you think USMCA takes a week?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where McConnell needs to bring up USMCA literally on January 6th.
He mentioned yesterday something, the business of the Senate's going to have to be reordered. He gave some early tell on that, correct? I think this is turning into a process fiasco.
Right. He said be back and ready to vote on Monday, January 6th. They need to bring up USMCA starting on Monday, January 6th.
Okay. On the process. Also, what is she trying to do? What is her leverage trying to get? She's trying to wedge in here somewhere. Where do you guys think? What is she trying to accomplish? Because she does have set goals. That's what I say. She knew she had to go on a forced march from September 24th to basically December 21st. She had, 90 days to impeach a president of the United States. And she got it done. What is she trying? She understands that the Senate is not good territory for them, and they're going to get chopped up, and the polls are already shifting against them. What is she trying to accomplish?
Well, here's the thing I can't figure out. Is she trying to hang on to this as long as possible? Can you hang on to this over an election? Can she run on this?
According to constitutional scholars, there's no time frame. It doesn't expire. I heard some guys on TV the other night, that constitutional guys, that said, theoretically,
There's no limit.
But according to Feldman, you're not impeached.
Yeah, but I mean, Feldman's a kook. Okay, this is the guy, and I'm deadly serious. Feldman's the guy that wrote a fawning piece about Sharia law for the New York Times. Okay, I'm not going to have his views on the Constitution being, I mean.
Are we going to have your dissertation on Feldman online?
It's been there.
No Go Zones?
It's been there.
Which is still one of my favorite books.
Here's the thing. Thank you. Here's the thing.
One real piece of work you ever accomplished. Yeah.
Well, that and this, right?
Mean, this is not bad, not shabby. You whine every day, but it's getting there.
God, working with you, you would whine every day.
We want them sullen, not mutinous.
We could go all day. Does Nancy Pelosi want to hang on to this? How long does she want to hang on to this? Does she want the candidates to be able to campaign on this and say, look, if you return us...
I think what she doesn't want is a quick and dirty acquittal and said, hey, this is a waste of time.
But what does she want was the question.
Well, and I think Raheem's spot on there because the fundamental problem Democrats have right now is they don't know how to define victory. yes, they've passed it out of the House. They haven't sent it to the Senate. They passed it out of the House. There is no scenario in which they're able to convict President Trump on either one of these articles in the Senate. But Democrats don't know how to define victory for either end of their caucus, whether it's the wacko squad or whether it's the more vulnerable members.
I'm going to come back. We're going to come back. We're going to take a short commercial break. I'm going to give a tease. Mm-hmm. We're going to come back and define. We're going to hear from you guys a defining victory for the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Raheem, how do people get to all the information we give them every day?
Yeah, if you check out warroom.org, we have a great lead story at the moment. Quid pro Joe, Biden's brother's firm was handed a $1.5 billion Iraq contract. It's a great article by our friend Jason Jones, filmmaker. You can check it out at warroom.org. And while you're there, drop us your email. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all the rest.
Okay, you're listening to War Room Impeachment. We're here every day of the week, 7 days a week, even over the holidays, leading up to the trial of the century, the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. We'll be back with Raheem and Steve Jason in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Episode 82. It's 20 December, Year of Our Lord 2019. War Room Impeachment. Raheem, Jason, myself. A lot to get to. What is when you're all over Pelosi about defining victory? How does the President of the United States, how do you believe he defines victory?
I think by being fully exonerated through a trial in the Senate. And this isn't just a matter of being acquitted on these two ridiculous impeachment charges. This is about proving to the national media, to the Democrats, to the American public, that this whole thing started as a sham. That means the whistleblower. It means that there's real deal abuses and concerns. That means getting into the Joe and Hunter Biden nonsense. And this has been a complete unconstitutional ramrod from Adam Schiff from the beginning. That means bringing him forward too.
Okay, you're one of the most hard-bitten, cynical professionals I know.
One's the reason I love you. I'm in a great mood today.
No, this is cheery, Jason. But my point is, you're opening. If you talk to the pros around town, and if you talk to the Republican establishment, you're opening Pandora's box, right? They just want to get this thing in, have a couple of days. Once you get the vote, take the vote. You know, the traditional thing. Once you got the votes, take the vote and get out of there. You're opening Pandora's box. That's what they're saying. You have not mitigated your downside risk.
No, I know that where the Democrats and the media are going to want to try to push this, they're going to try to push this to a full trial. They're going to push this, and we need to go and define it on our terms. And first and foremost, President Trump, I'm following his lead. He is not going to sit there while he just gets smacked in the face over and over and over, and he has senators passing notes and, you know, raising their hand, and can I whisper a question? When they're out there just throttling him every single
One of the exercises we're going to do here at War Room Impeachment with the great staff that and team that Raheem has put together is we're going to take the 7,000 pages over the holidays and we're going to curate what Adam Schiff's going to say, right? Adam Schiff, because if they go their way, we can tell them what they're going to do. It's going to be 4 days of Adam Schiff curating all the interagency consensus that hates Trump into one thing and to spend 4 days on global TV hammering the president, right?
We're going to have a mock trial.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. We'll have essentially a
But the other thing we're going to do, Steve, is we're going to go through.
Because we're the only guys who went through all 7,000 pages of it.
Right. We're also going to go through the timeline of this. And so the media wants selectively, and we have this, it's done, we just need to tighten it up before we put it on the site. But we have a very detailed thing of here's where all the Democrats calling for impeachment before we got to this. Here's where the U.S. has raised issues with aid to Ukraine well before this. We're going to go through and point out the things that the media wants to conveniently overlook, but every listener of warroom.org, War Room Impeachment, needs to know.
We got, just weigh and measure. You've got, you know, Pompeo, you got Bolton, you got Mulvaney, you got Russ Vogt and the guys at OMB. I mean, we got to get those. Not so terrible. Democrats be so terrible. You know, this whole thing, this whole Ukraine thing. And look who we got. Look at the whistleblower. Look at all the connections to the whistleblower. Look at the Bidens, right? Look at having to view the connectivity. You get Brennan. You can bring all the apparatus. You start bringing the apparatus in here because of the whistleblower. That's the key that picks the lock, right? You get all that, everything in the interagency consensus is being done to thwart the president. And you see it, and you expose it on global TV. Why would you not do that? What can Pompeo and Mulvaney and Bolton say that's so terrible?
It's not about what these guys can say that's terrible for the president. a lot of these senators, even on the Republican side, don't care about that. Number one, what they care about is having to answer the questions of their constituents that don't necessarily like that. And they don't even like those uncomfortable moments. They don't want to waste the time on the street. But number two, remember, a lot of these guys have either been a part of or have been willing to turn a blind eye to the interagency consensus over the last decade.
Now we get down to it.
That's a really good point.
Maybe that, and Senator Graham's a good man, but you think that Senator Graham says, you give me a witness list, I'm saying no.
Correct. I mean, and again, I like Senator Graham as a human being. But Senator Graham, as a politician, is all over the map. He was in Ukraine in 2013 with Yovanovitch and John McCain. He was shaking hands and smirking and smiling as Joe Biden and his son were doing the dirty deals with the board and Burisma. Why would Lindsey Graham want all that history brought up? He's trying to repurpose himself.
Is this the conundrum that the establishment, even the Republican establishment, does not want to be put on trial here?
Yeah, and I think they're the
thing. And that's what it is. What Trump's going to do is turn the guns back on them. He's going to turn the guns back on the Washington consensus, the interagency process that hammered him for weeks and weeks and weeks. And this is about America First national security policy. This is why he was elected. This is what the American people want. He's going to turn the guns on them in a trial that he has his witnesses. And it ain't going to be pretty.
Here's what most people at home might not realize as a whole. The U.S. Senate is a witness protection program in many ways. You go there to slow things down. You go there to hide in the tall grass. Most of the senators, there are some who are very good on TV, who are very skilled communicators, but the vast majority, they're terrible on TV. They don't know how to go out and articulate how they've been voting for these massive budgets year after year after year.
Everything this trial is going to be. This is the other thing. We're talking about the Democratic primary in the second half of the show. However, the reason we need this trial, Bernie's answer talking about the Afghan papers, misses the point. And for the Bernie people, you miss the point. The Afghan papers published by the Washington Post, everybody's going to read it. We're going to do a special on it. He said it was like the war on terror and everything. He misses the point. Also, their responses on China was like it was a junior high school, you know, write a one-page essay on China. It's too immature, and it's embarrassing that these people want to be commander-in-chief. That's what this trial is going to be about. You're going to dig down into what this apparatus is. You're going to expose the Brennans. You're going to expose the whistleblower. And I'm not a deep state guy. I don't have a tinfoil hat on today, right? This is going to expose, and that's what they don't want to do. They want to quick and dirty, have Schiff just do the curated version of what we saw from Ambassador Taylor to Fiona Hill. We want to have a afternoon of Fiona Hill's curated testimony read by Adam Schiff on national TV. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not going to happen. Donald J. Trump is not going to just sit there and listen to that. And people think he is. It's just they don't understand the man. They don't understand the mission.
And the other thing, too, is we can't allow national Democrats to get away with what they put the country through here. There has to be.
You think for history and for the country and for the institutions it needs to be.
Yes, because here's the fundamental thing, Steve. It's not going to stop with this impeachment push. We've talked about this before. They're going to try to push for another impeachment on the Mueller report. Karen Bass, other Democrats have already said they want to come back in 2021.
They're going to do it again. This is a permanent impeachment process.
If we don't drive the stake into the heart
of the beast now,
we're never going to stop it.
Raheem, real quickly, we've got about a minute and a half before you talk about the site. Also, we're going to go back. You were there at the beginning. That's all got to come back. This doesn't talk about, this is not about 16. This is not about 15. This goes back to 13 and even beyond, right? It goes back to that depth, and that all will come out. And then the people are going to sit there and go, Donald, and a lot of Democrats are going to say, you know that guy Trump? He actually speaks for me when he talks about that. I don't want any of this crap. If this is what's going on, I don't want it. And I'm certainly not going to pay for it, and I'm not going to vote for it.
By the way, I think the President Trump's presidential library would look kind of good with the strap line. You know, President Trump's so good they impeached him twice. I think he could lean into that.
Dude.
Beat it twice.
Beat it twice. We're going to trademark that. Okay, what about the site here?
www.warroom.org. All the latest information on impeachment and more as it breaks. And you can follow us on Twitter at WarRoom2020. Lots of traction on there, especially after Stephen K. Bannon's visit with Fox Business last night. Had a lot of visitors to the War Room 2020 Twitter account as a result. So good job, Steve.
Thank you. Trish Weo, that's the Trish Reagan team. Okay, we're going to come back. When we get back, we're going to deconstruct the witness protection program that is the Democratic primary. I've got to tell you, if they think that snooze fest in L.A., anybody on that stage is going to beat President Donald J. Trump. I got another thing. You got another thing coming. War Room Impeachment, short commercial break. Raheem, Jason, Steve will be back in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 82, War Room Impeachment, Friday, the 20th of December, 2019. Pretty quiet in town. When they get out, don't they, Jason?
I tell you, traffic getting in here this morning, I loved it. It took me like 15 minutes to get in here. Sometimes it might take a half hour, 40 minutes, 15 minutes, I breezed right in.
Remember a year ago, POTUS, this is when POTUS spent Christmas here. Didn't even go to Mar-a-Lago because of the budget fiasco. But this town is full. It's nothing but crickets now. Love it. When D.C.'s the best.
D.C.'s a wonderful town when all the politicians are gone.
Honestly,
it so is.
Okay, speaking of politicians, let's talk about Christianity today. What is going on here? And first off, is this really an evangelical? I know Billy Graham and the family, which are fantastic, started. But has this gotten off the evangelical? I mean, this has been pretty anti-Trump for a while.
It's been anti-Trump for a while, and it's a publication that I'll look at online quite a bit, although I took it off my bookmarks list about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. They'd really been trending more in an anti-Trump manner lately, and they were pretty heated. That some good
so
coverage.
In your faith, if somebody's anti-Trump, you'll take them off?
No, but it's I don't go there to read about President Trump. I go
right.
there to read
you
about
You go to Politico to read on Trump and Breitbart and other sites. You go to Christianity Today to get teachings and enlightenment of Christianity.
Yeah, and I think they have some good commentary on contemporary culture. I think they do have some good folks there in writing. But if I see something that's just bashing on President Trump, look, if I want that, I'll go to Slate. You know, if I want that, I'll go to HuffPo with one of our best listeners, Sharice Date. I'll read one of his stories. But when we talk about Christianity
today. By the
way,
Sharice, is the sound good today? He's a senior editor over there and our sound engineer.
I know, but we do appreciate subscribing to my worry is that he's not subscribed to the podcast and he only listens live to get it in exact real time. Sharice, we need you to download and make sure you're subscribing.
One of the best reporters out there. But boy, what a hater.
So with Christianity Today, and here's the thing, they really got amped up in the coverage during the, and I don't disagree with them on a lot of this. In fact, I agree with them on a lot of it, on the what was happening to a lot of Christians in Syria because of our decision with Turkey and with the Kurds. They stayed on that for quite a bit, but
they've done a good job on the persecution of the church in the Middle East.
Yeah, they've done a really good job of that. But lately, just there have been a lot more stories that have been anti-Trump, and it really struck me as odd. And so when I saw this,
get the audience up to speed. A lot of our audience may not go to Christianity Today.
Yeah, and so they wrote this editorial calling for the removal of President Trump, and I mean this is. Pretty hard hitting, says, but the facts in this incident are unambiguous. The president of the United States attempted to use his political power to coerce a foreign leader to harass and discredit one of the president's political opponents. That is not only a violation of the Constitution, more importantly, it is profoundly immoral. And this is Christianity Today. I mean, this isn't like a, you know, like a Slate or a HuffPo. So as we started going through later on, the first thing that popped in my head is I saw this and it's just, this scathing over the top, really oddly placed for a publication like Christianity Today. First thing I remembered was a sermon that my pastor gave about 2 months ago where he walked up to the pulpit and he literally had a 2x4 and he's holding it out in front of his face. He's like, hey, he's like, I noticed you have a speck in your eye. And so it reminded me back to the teachings of the book of Matthew. And it really came across, this Christianity Today piece really came across as judgy. And it's like, I thought we want to bring everyone to the fold. I thought we wanted to lead by example. But it just, the tone of it seems so at contrast with anything it was based on or anything.
The Democratic Party is so, what's so shocked me over the last week or two, the Constitution, now they're pushing forward the Christianity. They've now enveloped to get to Trump. Their hatred of Trump is so extreme. They will take things, the founders, people.
I never thought we'd get to a point where CNN and the Washington Post were leading with an op-ed from Mark Galley of Christianity Today.
Exactly.
And the other thing, too, and here's the thing that why it frustrates me, that if, say you're Mark Galley, say, okay, look, clearly he doesn't like President Trump, and that's his right, and he can have his opinion there. But he has to know that the mainstream media is then going to come through and try to say that all evangelicals now oppose President Trump, that this is, there's some big, massive anti-Trump backlash. And Galley knows that.
Oh, but he knows, but the, no offense, he knows this is going to get him on CNN on the Sunday shows. This is going to get him. Now he's going to be the spokesman for the evangelicals that oppose President Trump. This guy will be everywhere. That op-ed was so strategically placed. The way he, the timing he did this, the language he used.
But you know, Stephen, to that point, in addition to the teachings from the book of Matthew, the other thing that popped in my head is Galley essentially became this kind of this faux spokesperson for evangelicals in the country. For everyone who has the John 3:16 out there, don't forget John 3:17, for God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world. And it really seems to me like Galley is now taking on this whole media persona. He's kind of, I think he's kind of forgotten his way in trying to judge President Trump.
Well, but I think he's in a practical way. He, watch, this guy's going to have a lot bigger role. They're going to try to come at President Trump from, they're going to try to blow up the gun movement and to blow up the evangelical support of President Trump, who's done more
right.
for.
They want to drive a false wedge.
False wedge. Okay, this is War Room Impeachment, episode 82, Raheem, Jason, Steve. When we get back, we're going to go to Los Angeles. We're going to go through everything on the Democratic primary, talk about the individuals. We return on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Live from Capitol Hill, Friday, the 20th of December, year of our Lord, 2019. It's episode 82. You're at War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Radio Network nationwide, on americasvoice.news globally, and Newsmax TV. With Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. Okay, the Witness Protection Program, Los Angeles episode last night. The media today, just start with you, Raheem. The media is, oh my God, we really had a debate. Look at this. There's some pillow fight.
Well, they pillow had more fight. Of a debate than they've ever had. You got to give them credit somewhere.
Okay, I want the glad people also understand. I've been saying this. I said this about Bernie and Hillary 4 years ago. It's a pillow fight in the primary. Bernie was a pillow fight. No Clinton cash, no corruption, none of her venality, none of that. Why do you say it was a debate last night?
It was more of a debate than they've ever had. They were willing to take shots at each other. They were willing to get into some detail.
Wine cave is a shot.
Wine cave is a glass. Look, they did end up disagreeing with each other quite robustly about policy, about some things, and you started to see the fractures. You started to see the fractures between, like, Sanders and Biden, when Sanders is like, oh, I like Joe, he's my friend, and Joe winces away from the mic, goes, oh, yeah. And you started to see that with Buttigieg and Klobuchar. Klobuchar, by the way, who I think actually had a performance like she hasn't had before, yep, actually was intelligible, made decent points, wasn't too nervous. I mean, she's had this nervousness problem, but she wasn't too nervous last night. Seems to be coming into her own a little bit up there. I'm not saying this
I like the fact when she turned on Mayor Pete and said, hey, you've been criticizing the thing up here. Look at what we've done. She walked through for Democrats what yes. the accomplishments were, and she didn't hit with the second shot right then, which, like, hey, dude, you lost a state race.
Yes.
You know, in Indiana, you know, third down the ticket. Don't yeah. be lecturing
by
us.
By treasure.
Points, she said.
Treasure.
Yeah, it's like, she actually cut him slack, said, you lost it by 20, when actually, I guess he lost it by 25.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
that's look, why, that's the difference between a pillow fight. Trump, trust me, would have owned, it would have been 40, yes. right?
And the difference is they all got to say a little bit more last night as well. Having fewer candidates on stage allowed for that. It allowed for some people to come off worse. I think Tom Steyer came off worse. I mean, he's won that same tie, by the way, to the last three debates. I don't know who got
Tom
in that Steyer,
people
tie,
tell you,
awful.
Tom Steyer's another guy. In real life, he's not that guy. Up there, he's just, he's a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, it doesn't, very
he's
robotic.
He's an automaton, right? It doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also, by the way, and if you look at some of the polls that are coming out, everyone thinks that Andrew Yang had a good performance. I didn't think Andrew Yang had a good performance. I think he spoke more, so I think he got noticed more, but I don't think anything of what he said was necessarily, and I know you guys disagree with me on that, but I don't think the China answer was impressive at all.
Yeah, my on Yang's China answer.
And we have clips, by the way.
We do have clips. If we had that, I'd love to love to go
clips.
Into it. But
yeah. What did you think? What didn't you like about his China answer? His so, China answer actually had more maturity. It was terrible in the relation of where we are with China. I mean, this thing was embarrassing. They're running for student council president. Mm-hmm. This is a troubled world. You need tough people for tough times, right? The America's doing great. The economy's being turned around, but we're in a geopolitical, dark clouds on the horizon. And you're telling me that they're running for student council president. Democrats have to understand these are immature answers.
Yes, but Yang came across as the tallest midget last night on the China answer. And what I mean by that is of all the terrible answers, he at least acknowledged the economic competition between the U.S. and China.
Hong Kong. I spent 4 months there, and seeing what's happening on the streets, it's shocking. They banned face masks in Hong Kong. Why? Because they have AI technology that now is using facial recognition to identify protesters if they so much as do anything on the street, so they can follow up with them and detain them later. This is the rivalry that we have to win where China's concerned. They're in the process of leapfrogging us in AI because they have more data than we do, and their government is subsidizing it to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. I have sat with our leading technologists, and they say they cannot match the Chinese resources. China just produced its first major smartphone that does not have Google apps, and it is now trying to export its technology to the rest of the world. What we have to do is build an international coalition to set technology standards, and then you can bring the Chinese to the table in a very real way, because this is their top priority, and this is where we need to outcompete them and win.
He gets to a point he didn't define. This is the key point. The most significant geopolitical event in 2019 is the Chinese in the spring talking about setting their own, decoupling from the West and setting their own standards. Yang gets to it, but he does it in kind of a techie way that the working class people and middle class people who don't follow this every day are not going to grasp it. So he did talk about one of the most points, but they kind of, like, even in Hong Kong, he kind of dances around the surface, doesn't
talk
about
it. Yeah, and he does it in this way that's like, I've spoken to the technologists and they say they can't match the investment.
I like it's Yang, like, though.
He's,
Yang,
I'm not going to feel Yang, sorry Yang, for and, these and, billionaires and, in Silicon
right.
Valley.
Yeah, I like Yang's got, he's got a lot of room to grow, I think. He's got real potential.
I agree with you, but what I like is the fact that he at least brought up the competition factor.
100%.
This is the existential threat for the West versus the East, and what the next 100 years of human history are going to look like, and what they're going to be.
Well, the winners of this of the struggle of the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. It's not about the people of China. This is the greatest people, some of the greatest people on earth. Whoever wins this struggle is going to write the history of the 21st century.
I think if he had ended with something like, you know, bearing in mind your points, but if it ended with something like, you know, this is a battle, this is a war we need to win, rather than let's get together and bring China to the table, it would have been a more serious point and people would have taken it more seriously on the subject.
What else? So we got
Joe Biden.
Yeah, Joe Biden.
We'll talk about
Joe
Biden last night. So for he was absent from a lot of the debate. And in fact, you saw him. He would cross his arms a couple times. I thought he was getting a little bit into Stockdale territory, where he's kind of wandering around. And you know, I was like, where, you know, someone
that's from
you.
Admiral Stockdale, one of my personal heroes.
Yeah, yeah. No, 1992. He was Ross Perot's running mate. For anyone who's not a boomer.
What am I here
like
for?
Myself. But Joe Biden's wandering around. He's got his arms crossed. But he actually, I thought, played it pretty smart. Because, like, you know what? If these other candidates are going to go and fight, I'm just going to stay out of this. And at the end of the day, I'm still leading this whole thing nationally. I thought he actually played last night pretty. He had some goofy stuff. He should be pummeled over that jobs answer, saying that he's fine giving up a bunch of jobs to have green jobs. That's not going to help you win back Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. But I thought staying out of the fray was smart for him.
I thought the China answer was pathetic. And, you know, Admiral Stockdale was one of the great true American heroes. It was terrible that he was put in that situation. But Biden seems to me still wanders. I mean, it's not focused. That note to Democrats. I don't care what his name recognition is. That's not going to withstand the onslaught of Donald J. Trump day in and day out in a full beatdown. Okay, just not.
He's also all over the place emotionally. I don't know if anybody picked up on this, but one answer would be really cool and calm and whatever, and then the next answer he'd be shouting and screaming to the camera. He gave a shouting answer to the immigration answer. Nobody was disagreeing with him. Why was he angry?
It was your crazy uncle territory. Okay, warroom.org is our website. This is War Room Impeachment podcast. You got to download it. It's all free.
Subscribe, leave a review. We love it all. Okay, good and bad.
Episode 82. We're going to return with Jason, Raheem, Steve in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Radio Network nationwide, on America's Voice.news and Newsmax TV on cable. It's War Room Impeachment, episode 82. live from Capitol Hill. Historic moment just happened. Mr. Raheem Kassam, close to your heart, what happened?
Breaking out of the House of Commons, Boris Johnson, the renewed Prime Minister with an increased mandate, has had his EU withdrawal agreement bill passed 358 votes to 234, breaking years of deadlock in the House of Commons. The bill will ban an extension also of any transition period past 2020. That means that while Britain will leave the European Union on January the 31st, Britain will be part of no European Union institutions in any way proper beyond 2020. This will now move on through the
nullification
Lords.
Project. The nullification project gets blown up in the month of January in 2020 in England, the Brexit part, and it's going to get blown up in a trial of Donald J. Trump in the same month. This, if we pitch this in Hollywood, they're throwing it out of the room.
And by the way, it's all coming together. Every single thing from 2015 to today and to into January has moved at the same time. When the articles of impeachment were first filed, I think was the same day they announced same the UK day. General election. The whole thing has been...
They're inextricably linked, folks. And the beatdown that the Tories just gave the Labour Party is going to be kind of equivalent to the beatdown that President Trump's populist nationalist Republican Party, the Worker Party, is going to give on the Democrats. Let's go to this real quickly. We got 2 minutes left. Jason, this article in Politico, we're going to put it up. Everybody should read it. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, it talks through how President Trump wants to have a trial. He wants to get to the bottom of this. In particular, has the president some of his recent quotes highlighting the whistleblower. And President recently has said he doesn't mind there being a longer trial if it runs long, but we get to the bottom of this, then he's fine with it. And there are a number of allies, myself included, who agree with him.
What do you think happens? He's leaving for Mar-a-Lago today, right? He'll get some relaxation, some time with the family, some golf, but his primary focus is going to be on the trial of the century.
Absolutely. In fact, Bob Davis from the Wall Street Journal, who's a, I know a friend of the show. I say friend in a very kind of loose term.
I like Bob.
But he's a good guy.
Always wrong on trade, but a good guy.
Good guy. He tweeted out the other day, hey, does this mean reporters are going to have a break and the president won't be tweeting over the holidays? I was like, no, I'm going to take the over on that. I'm going to say holiday tweets for everyone, Bob.
Yeah. Okay, Raheem, how do people get more information about what we're doing here?
Oh, we're populating the site, warroom.org, over the course of the day with all the latest breaking news from the impeachment process and also reactions from the Democrat debate last night. You're not going to want to miss it. And it's all populated also, if you're on Twitter, at warroom2020.
Okay, we're going to be back tomorrow morning live at 9, but we've got a special broadcast today at 5 o'clock. We're going to have another special today at 5. We're going to drill down more on some of the Democratic Party debates, but particularly Afghanistan and other issues. Then back tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Bill McGinley will come in. He's going to be my co-host tomorrow morning. So every day of the week, we've got shows for you to get you all up to speed on this most important event in modern American political history, the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. And coming in January, the trial of the century, war of impeachment. See you at 5.